Welcome everyone to Phone Show Chat. This is number 514, recording this on Saturday the 31st of August 2019. I am Steve Litchfield for the Phone Show. With me I have my regular co-host up in North Wales.
It's Ted Salmon. Hello everyone, greetings.
It's also the Pixel Swim podcast, and by substitution, because our special guest, who actually shut down his own podcast for 1 week in honour, is Steve Heinrich. Hi there, Steve.
Hi, Ted. Hi, Steve. It's great to be here.
Yeah. So remind people where they can find you. Give us the full URL and specs. Go on.
You can visit pixelswim.com, and you can find any sort of contact info there. So,
yeah. And we've got you on because, we haven't had you on for quite a while. Also, the couple of things you want to feed back in from some of our recent topics on PSC. A few reminders of URLs, stevelitchfield.com. Of course, for the show notes, tedsalmon.com. Don't forget the Ellen Salmon for everything Ted does. Yes, I'm at Steve Litchfield on Twitter. What are you on Twitter, Steve?
It's at PixelSwim as well there.
Lovely, nice and easy. Now, we have a few bits of errata and miscellany. Mike LaTorre, Ted, do you want to kick off with him?
Yeah, we were talking last week about Google Play Books, and I was complaining about it, about download limits, etc. And Mike says, my understanding that this issue is is to do with the publisher deciding numbers of downloads and numbers of devices involved. In fact, back in my crazed ROM flashing days, he says, I used to buck up against the Amazon Kindle limits quite often. The nice thing is, though, that Amazon makes it simple to remove old devices on the website and thus restore functionality. It would be great if Google did the same thing. Yeah, I'm always doing that, going to Amazon, checking out all the devices you've got registered and wiping off about 50 at a time. So yeah, I'm glad that someone else sees the problem too.
Adrian Brain, this is on the subject of Asian keyboards. He says, in answer to Steve's pondering on Asian keyboards and how they integrate their characters, when I was working briefly in Japan, I got into a real battle with the PC keyboards. It appears similar to our QWERTY, but often had a few keys swapped around, and the spacebar was used as an extended sort of shift key to get to the kanji characters. Most UK and US keyboards only overload each key with one extra character. The Japanese often have three or four overload characters, so it takes more shift functions to get to them. On top of that, keys could launch on on-screen keyboards that you can select special characters with the mouse. It was decidedly weird to me at first, says Adrian, but the locals were remarkably efficient at using all the different options. Harry Meyer reports that kanji has 50,000 different symbols.
Wow. Good grief. Can you imagine? I suppose it was whatever you grow up with, isn't it? If you grow up with that four or more functions for each shift key or whatever, then I suppose you just know it when you know what it is and get used to it.
Yeah. Anyway, carry on.
Yeah. We were also talking last week on the show about Telegram in relation to other messaging clients and about the not being able to put it on all devices. I think you, Steve, about which service was it you were talking about not being able to do that with?
WhatsApp.
Yeah. So Frank Neidhart wrote in and said, on Telegram, it's the main messenger that I use, and I've convinced my whole family to use it as well. Telegram is said to be very secure, but that's only half the truth. If you just start a chat, it is stored on their servers and all transmissions are encrypted, but it's not end-to-end encryption as some other messengers have. However, if you start a secret chat, it is end-to-end encrypted, but that makes it impossible to share the chat between all of your devices. So you have to choose, says Frank, between convenience and security. Hope you're keeping up with that.
Steve, you're a big Telegram user, aren't you?
I tried to be at one point. It's SMS is still the main mode of messaging over here in the US, so not many people use messengers outside of Facebook, I would say.
So what about with your wife? Is that SMS, or have you converted her?
We do use Telegram if SMS isn't working for some reason, which isn't very often, but we have used it in the past, but not very frequently, to be honest. But I do know what Frank's talking about here with the end-to-end encryption, that it's not as obvious in the app to use that by default. So you essentially all your chats are not end-to-end encrypted if you're doing things like out of the box. So
yeah, Ted, if I understood this right, that these new rich communication services that are coming in and the Google turned on and Android, et cetera, and the carriers are increasingly supporting it means that in the future, maybe even things like Telegram will be actually not needed, because the default out-of-the-box messaging system and all of these modern phones will support media attachments and inclusions and will be more robust and across all devices. Maybe things like Telegram won't be needed.
Yeah, well, that's a rosy. That's the kind of picture that Google want you to believe. because apparently UK and France have got this up and running, and all of your devices on all of the carriers in UK and France, you should see that chat feature inside messages if you're using Google Messages. However, only I think it was 43 out of 450 carriers across the world have signed up to it, and there's still, like, most of them, by far most of them are not signed up to it, and they've got this vision of replacing it for everything and everyone. It's going to be the answer to everyone's communication, but actually when you read what's going on with it, it's far from that, and it's going to take them. They've got some targets for the end of 2020, I believe, and it just so happens that we in the UK and French people have got that in on that first, but yeah, it's a far from done.
I knew you'd know the answer. You're Mr. Communication. Yes. Nokia leads the global rankings for updates is the heading here. Yes, yes. I think you put this in, but I'll read it out. Nearly 96% of Nokia smartphones sold cumulatively since Q3 2018 are already running on Android Pi or have had an Android Pi update issued to them, making it the fastest brand to reach this level. According to CounterpointResearch.com, we'll put the link in the show notes. It's an interesting article you put in here, Ted. But it's slightly quirky research because it's kind of an arbitrary baseline. Q3 2018. I know that's kind of a year ago, but why not look at the stats for phones released, say, since the 1st of January 2018, iPhones that are coming up on 2 years, which I would have thought would be more telling, i.e. is Nokia still better than most at updating phones that are now 18 months or 2 years out of date? Stats here, Xiaomi, I'm showing this article, Xiaomi and Lenovo come in the top three with Nokia. And as ever, you can prove anything with statistics, though admittedly, Nokia is doing very well on the software side. So well done to them anyway, thanks to perhaps just to using near-stock Android.
Yeah, and that's the point, I think, is that that they were taking a snapshot of how things have been going just in that period of time, presumably because they got all the stats for that period of time. But anyway, yes. The point of the posting was good for them, good for Motorola too, who are catching them up rapidly. Android One seems to be the key factor going on here, and all of Nokia's phones that have got Android One of them are the ones that are being released now. Motorola are doing the same thing, but not for the Z series, but all their new devices are now Android One. And the fruit of Android One seems to be coming through at last, and kudos to Nokia and to Motorola coming up.
And Xiaomi, Xiaomi do some Android One hardware, do they?
They did the, was it the Poco phone or the, no, am I thinking of the wrong one? I think there was one or two that they did, but I could be wrong. We'll probably get letters about that. The Mi 2A or something? No, I can't remember.
Anyway, Xiaomi do produce so much that maybe this, they've released an awful lot of phones in the last year, and therefore there's a good chance that they are indeed on Pi. So
yeah, great, and that's good. I mean, we're not saying that it's only Nokia and Motorola. It's just that they are leading the pack, and I'm sure that Xiaomi are doing very well in it. But watch that space, and I'm supporting it. Carl Leong wrote in as well about his brand new sparkling Samsung Galaxy Note 10 Plus. Just wanted to make a few notes about that. He said, I traded in my Note 8 for the new Note 10 Plus, which included a free bump to 512 gigabytes, hurrah, and a wireless portable charger. It's gorgeously made, he says, an engineering marvel. 4,300 milliamp hour battery looks great. It's got a gobsmacking 6.8-inch AMOLED panel, the best display bar none, he says. Moving the power button to the left is no big issue for him. The fingerprint scanner is no issue for him either. It's fast and reliable. Smart switch from Samsung is now really good. I transferred everything from the Note via an SSD. Even the quick settings panel layout is preserved. Try out Good Lock, he says. We've spoken about that on the show before. It's a good bit of add-on software for Samsungs, which gives you lots of stuff to play with. And he says, LinkedIn, talking about what I was saying last week, LinkedIn can be uninstalled on his, but not, sadly, Facebook. And that seems to be some regional thing, because I cannot uninstall LinkedIn to my S10e. For anyone with anything older than a Note 8, he says, it's almost a sure yes to upgrade, he says, provided you can live without the headphone jack, the LED light, and the heart rate sensor. As with other phone sales, it really doesn't make sense if it's only one generation back. So thank you, Carl Young. That's really helpful to have some data points from people that have actually got this stuff.
Yeah, yeah. I was looking at the... He said he transferred everything from his Note 8 to the Note 10 Plus via a micro SD card. But surely that's got to be fiddly, Carl Young. Surely just plugging in a USB Type-C to Type-C cable, you know, via Type-C to a USB-A adapter if you've got the original desktop charging cable. Surely I always do my phones now via cable to cable, and it's by far the fastest. I mean, surely microSD involves ejecting it and transferring it and so on.
But it doesn't involve that level of switching. What he's saying is that the smart switch software from Samsung makes sure that even the quick setting panel's layout is preserved.
Right.
If you do it with a cable, and I do it the same way as you, Steve.
Yeah.
If you do it with a cable, you don't get that drilled down level of stuff that you get, for example, with Apple as well.
Okay, all right, that's a very good top tip then. When I upgrade from my S9 Plus to a newer Samsung, I shall try it via SSD. Very good.
Yeah, absolutely. Not for other makes of phones, I guess.
Yeah, yeah. Tim Evans reports that iOS, yes, we're talking about iOS briefly, iOS 13.1 beta is now out before iOS 13 is actually formally released. He said, I've never seen that before. It looks like support for the Apple Pencil in the code at first glance. Tim says, also more polish and app improvements, plus a jailbreak fix as of 12.4.2. If you're keeping up at the back, new maps update as well. I like this a lot. Walking around San Francisco, it looks very good. They need some time to roll out to other places, however.
That's odd, isn't it? New beta out before the actual version is out itself.
Yeah, yeah. Well, these things are all a bit staggered. We can't talk in the Android world, can we? Because we're just about to upgrade to Android 10 from Android Pie on our Pixels. And yet there are so many people with listening to this, and there were certainly the family members, who are Android 7, Android 8. Two or three versions back.
Yeah, yeah. I'm just not sure of an Android version that came with an advanced beta version before the actual version came out. Anyway, never mind. Thanks for that. Do keep us posted, Tim, on progress. Adrian Brain, lastly, on the Fairphone 3. You remember we had the Fairphone in, Steve, which you kindly lent to me, and we had a play with it. The modular approach is continuing, it seems. 5.7-inch full HD display, the same chunky design as previous Fairphone handsets, rear-mounted fingerprint scanner, IP54 rating, Android 9, near NFC as well, support for Pay, Google Pay and all the rest of it, Snapdragon 632, which is no slouch, as no doubt Steve will tell us later. Single 12 megapixel rear camera and 8 megapixel front-facing selfie, 3.5mm headphone jack, which many high-end devices have been dropping, of course. The USB-C port is there. No charger or USB-C cable in the box. 3,000 mAh battery, which is removable, of course. 4 gigs of RAM, 64 gigabytes of internal storage, micro SD card, and it's only available in the UK anyway from Sky Mobile, and you can pre-order one if you want one from the 10th of September. And it's supposed to be £400, but I couldn't find one for sale SIM free. I could only find one on contract at Sky Mobile, so we'll put a link in the show notes to those anyway. And just interesting, I thought, Steve, that you know, we were both kind of very interested in that, and it's still going. I thought they just slipped away somewhere.
Well, they were going for the, as you say, the modular approach, where you could literally down the road take out the undo a clip, the thing would fall apart. You take out the camera and slot in an upgraded camera. That never really panned out because there just wasn't the volumes there for them to produce newer, better components. But the idea of just being able to flick a plastic switch on the bottom of the phone and the phone almost literally comes apart, and you can not upgrade it, but you could repair it, you could change the battery, you could replace the speaker, that sort of thing. That is highly recommendable. It's rather odd that you have to go via Sky Mobile, though. Surely if ever there was a smartphone that should be available SIM free, is this one, so you don't have to mess around with contracts and wasting your time.
Yeah, absolutely. But I guess they've done some deal with Sky, and it probably suits Fairphone too, because they get a audience, shall we say. You know, the Sky will push it out to the people that have got accounts with Sky anyway. So, yeah, we'll probably never understand how these things work.
Yeah, I have asked for a Fairphone 3 for review, so I'll let you know if one arrives.
Great. Okay.
Right. Now, Mr. Steve Heinrich, you wanted to comment, first of all, on the Moto Z4 and tax saga of Ted saying, shall I, shan't I, get a Moto Z4 from the good old USA? Do you want to take us through that?
Should I just summarise that to begin with?
Sure.
After we spoke about that last week, I consulted with Steve Heinrich about the fact that when I went to try and order one from America, it appeared to me that he was going to get it for $535 all in, and it was going to cost me $630 all in. And I was going to get charged $93 for what they were calling a deposit or an estimated fee or something. It was all a bit woolly. But then Richard Yates popped in and said that Amazon seemed to be assuming import taxes, quoting me. Amazon apply the law, he says. Tax is due regardless of whether Chinese importers try their luck at lying about contents or not. HMRC knows this goes on and recently started a campaign to recruit more postal inspection officers and equipment. So the days of things usually slipping through are probably on the way out. Example of Nexus One from me, you know, I sent off of my Nexus One back in the day, Steve, I got a bill from DHL directly, so that the Google didn't charge me for that, but DHL did, and I had to pay the bill to the carrier. The point was that this seems to have changed, whereby Amazon USA were saying, no, we're taking that money up front, and we're assuming that you're going to try and not pay it, so we're going to pay it. We're going to take it from you, and we will pay the customs to the HMRC. So I think there was a bit of misunderstanding about what I was quite saying. But thank you, Steve Heinrich, for entering into the debate with me and proving, I think, that you certainly can get that phone in your hand significantly cheaper than we can.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, after you reached out about it. Sorry to say reached out.
That's okay.
I went through the process on Amazon, and there was definitely tax, which in the past hasn't always been the case. But you can definitely get it cheaper over here. And I think it does kind of prove Ted's point, unless I'm missing something that Richard Yates is trying to say about that. But it's way more affordable.
Sure.
Now, the G6, and on your podcast, Steve, you have a little sound bite, like a famous introduction. Then you revamped it with nice sound effects underneath it. I think it was space, you know, space noises and so on. And then immediately I'd kind of hinted that you should change it, this more polished version. You announced on the show that the LG G6 was broken and that you couldn't use it anymore. And I thought, oh dear, I've made him go to all that extra work. So give us the latest. This is the LG G6 weekly report here on PSC.
Yeah, it sure is. So, not long after I switched that your favorite introduction over to something different, I did the short of it is that the SIM tray on my G6 and the whole point of the G6, the weekly report was to keep me using the G6 continuously buying phones throughout the year. So I was going to try and use it for about a year, which I'm almost there. After we changed the introduction a couple weeks later, I was actually switching service to T-Mobile, and I hadn't taken the SIM card out in a long time. And the short of it is that the SIM tray on it is kind of it has sort of a design flaw. It's very weak. It's a weak and plasticky, and it's not something that's unique to just my G6. I've actually come across this in the past, but a part of it had broken off into the device where I could not get at it. Luckily, I was able to open up the phone and replace the battery in the past, so I knew how to crack it open and try and get that little piece out. But unfortunately, in trying to do that, it did break off one of the little pins on the SIM card reader. And then the SIM card reader itself is soldered to the motherboard. So it wasn't exactly a swap out for a new SIM card reader. Not something I can do is soldering things to the motherboard. So I had kind of given up on it at that point. And but then I Frank Niedhardt, who actually listens, I think, to both of our podcasts, he sent a video of Hugh Jeffries on YouTube, who does a lot of restorations on phones and stuff like that. And he actually, just right before my G6 broke, he had released a LG G6 video about restoring an LG G6. And it kind of refired my ambition to get it back up and running instead of just giving up on it and recycling it or something like that. So I actually bought an old LG G6, used one that was broken with just a cracked screen. So I have the T-Mobile version over here in the US. So I got the T-Mobile version from eBay, and it took, because since I'm able to open up the G6, it's just, you know, a heat gun and some adhesive to get through. I was able to pull out the motherboard from that one and put it into my, I guess, quote, current G6, and get everything back up and running, and put a little bit of adhesive and get the back stuck back on there. And yeah, it's back up and running. But yeah, like I said, the short of it is that SIM tray is kind of a design flaw. So it's always kind of in the back of my mind now that could potentially happen again, because it's not the first one that I've had to replace on the G6. So, and I know that somebody reached out as well about the iPhone using a metal SIM tray. And it's kind of one of those things where I wish that was the case, because it would definitely solve the design issue with this SIM tray, because it tends to be very fragile and break, and that's but like I said, it's back up and running, and we're good to go for now. So but in the meantime, I have been using the Moto X4 as kind of my backup phone that I got a couple months ago, kind of breaking my LG G6 pledge and just having that phone as a backup. But I've been using that and loving it. So my SIM card still hasn't found its way back into the G6 after repairing it. But yeah, overall, I think that's where I'm at. But I'm just, there's a lot of satisfaction in actually fixing something yourself, you know. And I'm just glad that it's back up and running and not off, you know, to be recycled potentially. You know, I don't know where it goes after I hand it in to be recycled. So yeah, that's where I'm at with the LG G6 this week.
Yeah, just Ted breaking here. Ted, it's not LG's phones specifically or only which have weak SIM trays. I don't know whether you've actually looked at the SIM tray in that Pixel 3 you've got there. Now, do LG make the Pixel 3? I forgot. I vaguely remember one was made by LG and one by HTC, or have I got that wrong?
No, not the 3. The 3 have been made directly by Foxconn, haven't they?
Okay, right.
And they dropped the HTC LG thing last year.
Okay, well, if you take out the SIM tray on the Pixel 3, if it's the same thing, the same one I had for review, you'll find that the outer bit of the SIM tray, which has the gasket and the seal, is connected to the main body of the SIM tray by plastic. And that plastic is quite weak. And at some point in trying to get my SIM card out, that plastic kind of fractured. It now wobbles around rather alarmingly. So it's A, sorry about that. But B, that certainly should be another case of a stronger SIM tray that doesn't break when you just lever it slightly to get a SIM card out. So do have a look at that.
I'm finding that to be the case with quite a few phones. In fact, it's a point I made last week on my Samsung Galaxy S10e review, which was that the SIM card tray is all plastic. And when I compared that with the, for example, the Sirocco, the Nokia 8 Sirocco, which was all metal, and it felt like it was made properly. I had the problems, you remember, with the Moto Z3 Play SIM tray back in the day as well. The one in the Razer Phone 2 is kind of wobbly. I think that some of them are made of metal and are made properly, but quite a lot of them are not.
Yeah. The other thing was that you said glue, Steve, that you re-glue the phone. So let's get, just to break this down, you use a heat gun to get the back glass back cover off a modern smartphone, and eventually it peels away with a lot of prying and a bit of force. But so what do you actually do? Do you just use the original glue, sort of press it together and warm the glue up again, or are you actually applying some aftermarket glue to help it stick together?
Well, if you want real details, you can go back and listen to the podcast. But overall, I did leave the original adhesive that was on the back, because like I mentioned, I actually did take the back off in the past to replace the battery. And I actually replaced the whole back panel as well, which includes the fingerprint sensor, because it had some cracking on the fingerprint sensor as well. So I put a whole new one on there. And so when I took it off this time, it was much easier to get off, which kind of leads me to believe that it wasn't IP rated anymore. But yeah, after I took it off, I left the adhesive that was on there, which kind of helped me get it into to place. But I did actually purchase a little roll of, I think it's 3M double-sided tape, like a very thin roll that does is made for smartphone repair. And so I just threw that on some of the hot spots on the adhesive in the back, and it's held up ever since. Like I said, it's made for smartphone repair, so I'm not too worried about it coming off again. But like I said, the IP rating is probably kind of mute at this point. So that's just how it goes. But yeah, it's pretty easy to get in the back of the G6. Part of the reason that I got the G6 is I watched the teardown videos before I bought it, and there's no cables or ribbons connecting the back piece to the motherboard anywhere, so you don't have to worry about chopping anything off while you're trying to pry it off, or anything sort of breaking when you take off the back piece. So the G6 is pretty repairable if you're willing to, you know, put a little heat and actually use playing cards to pry it off. So they're nice and soft. It's just, you know, just a paper card to get through, and it did the trick. So
you see, if the world's only repairable G6 with minimal adhesive that comes off at the drop of a hat, so you can get in and change the components. Very good.
Yeah.
And I guess I guess it doesn't actually matter in real life, because, like most of us, you're probably using it in some kind of TPU case that kind of holds the two halves together anyway.
Yeah, for sure. So I wasn't too worried about the you know, how strong the adhesive was on the back, but it does the trick. So
yeah, and that X4, Ted, was the X4 was one you Moto X4 you really liked.
Yeah, absolutely. Unfortunately, we did, in outside of the US, we couldn't get the Android One version, so we were stuck with the ordinary one, which outdated really quickly. Motorola didn't keep the software up to date, and it fell behind. It was also only 32 gigabytes of storage. There was a 64 gigabyte. Was the Android One 64, Steve?
Over here, the Android One does come in 32 and 64, right. And I got it in the 64 gigabyte version.
And we couldn't get the non-Android one in 64, so it was a lovely device, and I really, really liked it, but that 32 gig and the software falling behind was just rubbish.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, I put out Phone Show 373 in the week, guys, with my review of a totally new phone to me, the Oppo Reno 10 times zoom, which is rather stating the obvious in its title, but it at least doesn't tell you what it does.
No, it doesn't. It was 5 times zoom.
I know it's 10 times hybrid. But first of all, Steve, first, I mean, I presume you've watched the video. What were your impressions of this latest kind of competitor to the P30 Pro?
Not too impressed, I guess, overall. Yeah. The camera isn't the most important thing on a device for me, so it just seemed like kind of, yeah, not too intriguing, in my opinion. So,
yeah, everything seemed... Ted, as you remember, my impressions are kind of that it's a poor man's P30 Pro.
Yeah.
I feel a bit savage in even saying that, but because they've obviously tried their best, but their best in a world in which Huawei exists with an almost identically spec'd phone in many ways, their best just isn't good enough in this case.
No, absolutely. And that USP, I think, is misleading. All joking aside, calling it 10x zoom in the title.
Yeah.
And it's not 10 times zoom. It makes people think that it's got a 10 times optical zoom, I'm afraid. And that's misleading. That also, the speaker setup, which you demonstrated quite very ably, was what appears to have been a complete letdown. There's no Qi charging. The screen resolution was poor, I seem to remember. The whole thing just was too much money. I think you were right. If it had been cheaper, then you would say, yeah, okay, that's good because it's priced really well, but not at the price it was.
Am I remembering things wrong, Ted? I thought that Oppo, as it was a Chinese brand that brought in phones at a lower price than Huawei, which is now perceived in most of the world, maybe not America, but in most of the world as a premium brand, and therefore they make top-notch hardware, top spec components at a flagship price. I think of Oppo And I think of it in the same vein as Xiaomi. And I think, okay, well, this is going to be decent, very decent indeed, but it'll come in at half the price, at which point I can forgive a few failings. And it's just the fact that this comes in at £700, the same price as the P30 Pro is, and it much more than quite a few other flagships out there. That just seems crazy.
They just got greedy. And of course, we know that they're in bed with the OnePlus. And OnePlus prices are just going up and up all the time as well. So they're just doing what Huawei are doing, aren't they, with pricing? Yeah.
Well, at least OnePlus is that arm of the company is sticking with near stock Android with their Oxygen. And it can be forgiven a lot for going down that route. Whereas this Color OS, you would absolutely hate it. I'm sorry, Ted. If you can't live with Samsung, if you can't live with Huawei, you'd throw this out the window in the first hour.
Yeah, I'm absolutely sure I would. You're right. I don't want to see it. Don't let it darken my doorstep.
I promise. We will talk about my design frustrations maybe later on this show. I know you had some feedback there, Steve. Just what are you looking forward to? You've got this X4 and you've got the G6 ready to take its place once you get bored with the X4. So I guess that means you're not planning on upgrading either of them anytime soon. But you must be looking forward to trying something in the rest of the year.
Yeah, it was actually the first time that I saw a review of the Asus Zenfone 6, the 2019 version, because apparently there was another Zenfone 6 at one point.
Okay.
But it just kind of intrigued me more so than some other devices that have been coming out. And it was just the big battery. It's got a 5,000 milliamp hour battery. It's got the Snapdragon 855. It's got a full display, no notches, no cutouts, anything like that. And the biggest, the sort of unique selling point of it is it has a controllable swivel camera that has a regular and wide angle lenses on it. And really, I think overall, and a headphone jack, if I remember right, too. And so just comparatively, it ticked a lot of boxes for me. I know that you guys, it doesn't tick all of your guys' boxes, but for $499, honestly, it probably be the device that I try next, because I think I'm waiting until the end of the year to kind of go and try something else. By that time, maybe the price will be even a little bit lower. But for me, it takes a lot of fun boxes, I guess you could say, especially that camera and just the kind of uniqueness of that, the swivel camera that kind of swivels up to the front of the device. And I'm not too worried about the rating on it, because I think they always rate these sort of geared cameras, you know, for a certain amount of opens or closes whatever. And I'm not really too worried about the mechanism on it, because I don't really take a bunch of selfies or use face unlock or anything like that. So I think getting past the initial playing with the camera of, you know, swiveling it around to all sorts of angles and stuff like that, I don't think it's going to be, you know, I'm not worried about any sort of mechanism going out of commission anytime soon after getting trying the device. But I think overall, I think the only con to it is it is a large device. It might be too big of a form factor for me. But overall, I just think for me personally, I want to stress that I think it's probably the device that I'm looking at next, especially because of the battery life. I think that's going to be something I always enjoy is a giant battery, because I've had a Moto E4 Plus in the past, which had a 5,000 milliamp hour battery, and it's a major feature that I really, really like. I don't like having to top up, or even wireless charging. You know, you still have to leave the phone in one place for a certain amount of time if you're trying to charge it up. So with a 5,000 milliamp hour battery, you don't have to worry too much about charging things. And it doesn't have Qi charging, I believe. But like I said, with that battery, it's not really that big of a deal that I found in the past. So
it's a good price. I guess that's about £410 here, but I'm not sure how much they'll sell it for over here. But it's an LCD screen, which means that there'll be no proper always-on display. Well, unless they do it as well as LG have done it, in which case that shouldn't be such a barrier. There's no OIS in the main camera for you, Steve Litchfield. And it felt to me as though it was, they just missed. And if they'd made it $599 and stuck in the Qi charging and got all those extra boxes ticked, it would have felt like a real flagship. As it is, it feels like it's $100 too cheap, and those things could have just been added. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah, for sure. Like I said, the Qi charging, if you have that giant battery, you really don't miss it. I don't think it's something that's going to be, you know, it's not as big an issue if it doesn't have it with the, if you're not having to charge the battery for 3 days. So
sure. It'll be interesting to see what the LCD the screen's like, though.
Yeah, for sure. For me, it's still a viable option. I haven't really had an OLED anytime in the, you know, and I haven't used one at any length for in many years. So it's something I wouldn't miss necessarily. So,
and the LG did a good job with the G6. I remember reviewing the LG G6, and the always on display just worked really, really well. Okay, as Steve found, you know, the other week, if you put it in a dark room, you can see a grey box that outlines the screen because it's all the pixels are on all the time, but when you're not doing that, the rest of the time, it works really well.
Yeah, for sure. I actually turned mine off, I think, for just for distraction reasons. I always found the always-on display to be kind of a distracting thing, so okay. I don't mind having to power it on or double-tap to wake is good for me, too. So,
what about software? Now, from memory, I'm guessing it's something like Zen UI. That kind of rings a bell in my mind. So we're looking at yet another skin over stock Android with their own tweaks. And also, what's Asus's record on updates, both branch updates and also security updates? Do we know yet, Steve?
Yeah, I'm not sure what their update schedule is like. I from the reviews that I've seen so far, because I've just noticed they've a few reviewers here in the U.S. have been posting more reviews of it. It seems like the skin over it is pretty unobtrusive, from what I could tell. It seems pretty close to vanilla with some, you know, features added on top. So not too concerned about that. And also, for me personally, updates have never really been too big of a sticking point. As long as there's no major glaring bugs in the system. I mean, security updates are obviously nice to have, but I've never really run into any issues with a phone that hasn't been getting updates. I mean, I've been using the LG G6. I'm pretty sure it's on December 2018 security software and on Android 8.0. So, and I use it easily as a daily driver, and it's not really an issue for me personally. But for people out there, I'm guessing Asus probably, I can't really say for sure, but I'm guessing that they're probably not stellar as far as updates go.
Well, apparently the word is that because the Zenfone has been part of the beta program, they've turned over a new leaf with updates, and they've got kind of hooked into Google. The skin, as you say, Steve, is the lightest one they've ever had, and everyone is really positive about going forward that the that it's actually quite clean and that they will keep it updated. But you know, the proof of the pudding will be in the eating, won't it?
Yep.
Yeah. Let us move on. Let's give away a prize. Now, Ted, if I can have a random number, please get the generator ready. People supporting the phone show and phone show chat, the virtual pint of beer a month club. If you were to meet me in the street, would you grab me and haul me into the Dog and Duck for a pint? If so, see the URL, tinyurl.com/PS promo. Ted, I need a random number, please, between 1 and 110.
Okay, 1 and 110, and the number is 2.
Oh, you just threw me a loop there. Number 2 is Adrian Brain. So well done, Adrian. I should be in touch, and you can take 2 prizes. Yes, 2 prizes. I'm still trying to get rid of stuff here. Any 2 prizes from the long, long list at tinyurl.com/PS promo. And thanks very much for people if they are supporting the podcast and the shows. Now, Steve, do hang in there. We have Ted's, what he's been up to this week. Any impressions, any thoughts you want to share with the world?
Well, the big thing really for me this week has been the Samsung Galaxy S10e, and challenging myself if I could at last live with a Samsung. I've got the closest. I've been using it for a week now, pretty much the whole week, and I've got the closest that I've ever come to using a Samsung. There are still lots of little irritations, annoyances, but I've been trying really hard to live with them and not let them annoy me. For example, today I got a notification come through. There are four updates in the Samsung store or whatever it's called. And you've got no choice but to go through and sort them out and deal with them, let them install, or it will just forever remind you. And, you know, those are the little things that I don't want to use Samsung store, thank you, but I can't really find a way of getting rid of that and just turning it off without, I don't know, there are some software hacks out there that tend to work, but there's... The bottom line is that it's not vanilla enough for me, but I'm trying hard and I'm still working that through. There's so much to love about the phone. The whole concept of so many, we may have time in a minute to come back to box ticking again, but there's so many boxes ticked with this phone that, you know, you want for nothing. The thing that has been causing me the biggest problem this week, however, is the physical size. And I thought that it was okay at first because the screen goes right out to the edges and it's kind of big enough. In my review, which I'll link to in the show notes, I've been comparing it with the Sirocco because I think that's a fairly good match for it in some ways. And the screen is out to the edges, unlike the Sirocco top and bottom. It's got a chin and a forehead. And I thought, yeah, this is okay. But as the week's gone on, it's just too small for me, Steve. There's something that it needs to just be a bit bigger. It's too small. And when I try to read some things on it, it's not good enough. And the keyboard is not quite wide enough. But having said all that, you know, maybe I could live with that as well because of the amazing amount of boxes it ticks, including, incidentally, the DeX desktop software, which I've got going and works beautifully. It's got a lovely, beautiful screen. It really is. It's a flat piece of glass, unlike the other Samsung Galaxies out there of late. And I was testing it yesterday against all my other devices, watching a film on it. And now it's a small screen, but I watched this film and the difference between that and any other phone I had was marked. It was brighter, amazingly bright and vibrant and sharp. You could see, even though it's only a 1080p screen, it was still sharper than my 1440 Sirocco. The screen is glorious. It really is. Very, very nice. Qi charging, of course, all your power stuff going on, your gestures. We spoke last week about the One Hand Operation Plus app software, which I'll put in the show notes again because people have been liking using that since I mentioned it last week. The speakers I have found to be really, really good. I compared it with the Pixel 2 XL in the end, and they're very close to that. They don't quite get the same quality, but they certainly are as loud, if not louder. The cameras you covered, I'll come back to it next week with a more kind of drilled detailed view, but you know, I'm trying really hard with it. I'm trying not to let it annoy me with the Samsung software, and I'm trying really hard to live with the small size. Give me another week.
No, I mentioned a few weeks ago that does anyone out there have a vanilla S9, i.e. not the S9 Plus? Because I still say the original, quote, standard S9, that would be the perfect, because it's slightly bigger than the S10e. It's got all the same great features. And I think that, and it's also really dirt cheap now because it's now 18 months old, so you can pick it up for a song. So I still say, Ted, you've never ever tried the standard sized S9. That might be, in capitals, the one.
Or the S10.
Well, the S10 has got the ultrasonic fingerprint and it's got the cutouts on the screen. So there is a lot to be said for going for the backer generation here.
We may come back. We may have time to come to that whole topic a bit later. Just to chip in with, I think you're right though, that the S9 has a lot going for it for me. I think I would be bugged by the battery size. Incidentally, the battery on the S10e, I really wanted it to fail on that, but it doesn't. The battery is just as good as the Sirocco. It does really well in my tests, 24 to 30 hours between charges. And of course, it's got Qi charging. 6 to 7 hours screen on time with auto everything. The battery is really stellar. But I do hear bad things about the S9's battery, I have to say.
Yeah, the S9 battery wasn't terrific. It was certainly something you had to probably top up at tea time if you had a heavy day, or put it on the Qi pad. But we're kind of used to that, I'd have thought. So I still think that's worth a try, and it wouldn't cost you the earth. And somebody out there surely can lend you one for a few weeks and you can get some good feedback on it then.
I'll see what I can do. Just before we leave that, though, Kirk Kaufman chipped in and said, I like the size and weight of the S10e screen and speakers. However, one thing I found very annoying was that at any time I attempted to either adjust the volume or turn the screen on off, I would end up doing both. This has to do with the positioning of the volume rocker directly across from the fingerprint sensor and power switch. This effectively limited my ability to use the S10e and as a one-handed device, which was my chief reason for getting it. So, yeah, fair point. I haven't found that personally. And in actual fact, on the MeWe post, I posted a photograph of me holding it in my hand, and it was okay. I'm not finding the same as Kurt did, but fair enough. And the last thing I wanted to say was I found this case for it, Steve, which I'm not sure that I've seen for a long time, if ever, which was a clever little case which had rerouting of the sound. So the speaker coming out of the bottom speaker, the sound coming out of the bottom speaker, is blocked by the TPU, the plastic, but it's got holes going up the way, so out towards the front. And it like a Huawei camera does with images, it routes the sound through 90 yeah. degrees and pushes it out the front. And I tested it with and without, and I really think it works. I'm sure that you'll probably find that you'll say, oh no, it doesn't quite sound the same. But to me, it didn't seem to affect the sound much at all. And if you've got it in front of you watching a TV show or something, or a film, then that does push the sound towards you.
Yeah, and something similar happens on many of the iPhone battery extenders my family have used over the years, where, again, like these Mophie ones, and Apple do their own now.
Oh, yeah.
Which, again, the iPhone speakers are all at the bottom, but certainly the Mophie ones, from memory, they have a kind of 90-degree redirect. And as you say, for mid-range and treble frequencies, most of it makes it around the bend. I think the bass is probably somewhat limited by the redirection. But, yeah, it's a great idea, and I'm surprised there aren't more cases out there which try this feature, given that most phones now have bottom-firing speakers.
Seems to be good and fine. I'm still working on it, Steve. As I say, give me another week. I won't throw the towel in yet. but I think the main thing that is getting to me at the moment is the physical size. Apart from anything else.
Yeah, the thing about video playback being especially clear and glorious. Mm. I think that's partly what Samsung do on all of their recent flagships. This video enhancer mode, which is something you turn on in settings, and the moment it detects something's playing back video, whether it's Netflix, YouTube, BBC iPlayer, Amazon Prime Video, any of those, it automatically cuts in this, dramatically boosting brightness and colour and contrast to make video playback, as it sounds, enhanced and great. And it works really, really well. And I think part of what you're seeing there is the fact that the Samsung screens are actually better. I fully agree. They make the best displays on the planet. But also partly it's because they have this video enhancer thing kick in. And when I'm watching video playback on, for example, a Pixel, I think I have to manually go in it and max out brightness. And even then it's not as glorious as on my Samsung S9 Plus. So I think that's partly Samsung's good software.
Yeah, all of that rolled into one. They just do it, don't they? Samsung just do it. They do everything. Unfortunately, they don't stop doing it. We want there to be a cut-off point, please, Samsung. You know, you do everything fantastically, but then stop somewhere.
Indeed.
The other thing I was going to mention quickly was that the 3rd of September seems to be the confirmed date of the rollout of Android 10Q, whatever you want to call it.
Yes, I'm looking forward to that. I shall update my Pixels, and I'm sure you will do the same. Your end will report back. Also try it on the Pixel 3a XL, which I still have here, and I'll try doing the update on that as a production push. I've been basically killing my back doing DIY this week, so I'm in agony, but I have got a new gate and a new fence up, so I'm really pleased with that. So it's not all about the phones and technology this week, so do see my Twitter if you want to see a photo of the gate. I did have an embarrassed moment when an auto-rotate stopped working on my beloved S9 Plus, and I couldn't find a setting for this anywhere. It drove me mad for 24 hours. And then I remembered that on the quick settings panel, the word portrait, I thought, hang on a minute, that changes to the words auto-rotate. When you tap it, it shows you, it writes out the current state. So clearly the phone had been on in my pocket for some reason, and my skin had capacitive toggled this off at some point, so really rather embarrassed. I should have realised this after 30 seconds, and it took me 24 hours.
Is that the same thing as what I, on Pi devices, I tend to get a button in the corner, and when you turn the device round, the button comes on, and you tap it, and it knows you're giving it permission to turn round, or do I misunderstand?
What I'm used to having is, as you say, quite often you turn the device and the video playback turns with you. And if it doesn't, there's a little icon with the frames. You tap the frame and then it goes landscape. What was happening here was that I was tapping away at the little icon and nothing was happening.
Oh, okay.
And it was clearly because this portrait macroscopic thing had been toggled on, and I'd completely blocked it out of my mind that portrait was a thing that changed to auto-rotate physically written out on the quick settings when I tapped it. So, anyway, just pointing out how much of a clot I can be sometimes. It's all part of the learning curve. Yes, Phone Show 373 also included a rant from me about how the phone world is going. And I called out, you know, some of my traditional hot potatoes, in-screen fingerprint sensors that don't work as well as capacitive ones, waterfall screens that cover the sides of the phone so you can't actually hold them, audio jacks, my old favourite, because you now can't plug in aux cables, you can't plug in external microphones, notches and cutouts that no one really likes, but they're there anyway. Super fast charging is now there, never mind the fact that it might wreck the battery and longevity. And no more heart and oxygen sensors. Now, I use these quite often, several times a week, and this very day that we're recording this, one of my family members had a regular heartbeat, and we had to take them into A&E for a few hours. And the first sign of this was, A, them feeling a bit poorly, but also I said, well, let's look at your heart using the heart rate sensor on my S9 Plus. So they put the finger there, and we could see the actual electrical activity, effectively, the rhythm and the behaviour of the heart actually on the phone screen. It's just a really useful sensor. I'm sure people with Apple Watches out there are used to this now, and they say, oh, I get my Apple Watch would tell me if my heart was having problems. But it's just useful to have that sensor there. And again, that's something that's getting dropped for the very latest generation of Samsung
phones. Why
have
they taken that away? Do you know what the rationale is?
Just, I guess, that people don't use it. So they've taken it away. So the Note 10 series doesn't have those biometric sensors. It's just bizarre. So this whole long list of things. And somebody, after I posted the video, Phone Show 373, have a look at my YouTube channel. They said, what about notification LEDs, which also seem to have gone away in the latest generation of Samsung and many other phones? They don't have an LED which goes red when you're charging and blue when you've got a message of this sort and a green when you've got a message of that sort. They are genuinely useful features. People have loved notification LEDs for years and they've gone away.
Yeah, Mark Finley says that he loves his Note 9, but he has the LED off. I hate those blinking lights, he says. Good that we have the option, though, of course. And I use the always-on display for that kind of thing, Steve, because the Samsung it's got such a wonderful always-on display. And edge notifications flashing at you, and set it up how you want. I really don't feel the need to have notification LEDs.
I think for me the most useful one is the red light to show me it is actually charging and I've plugged the cable in. So right. It's at night time, it's dead tired, you put your phone on the stand or on the floor, plug it in, and the red light comes on, right, it's charging. If you rely on the always-on display, yes, it's written on, but it's in quite small writing. And let's face it, if most of us wear glasses or contact lenses and they take them out at night or off at night, you can't really see what's scribbled in small font on an always-on display on the floor or on the table beside you. Whereas a nice, glowing, warm red LED gives you a warm, fuzzy feeling.
I do think that going through your list of things from Phone Show 373, though, there is part of me that thinks that a lot of this stuff is technical tick boxing for review purposes over actual real world use. And I think that, you know, when you go through all those things, which features do actually people in the real world using these phones actually use? And I know that I don't. I mean, I always bang on about the fact that I want to have, you know, HDMI out. And actually, I hardly ever use it, but it's nice to have the box ticked, and so on. You know, lots of those things. 3.5 millimeter, great to have it. But actually, since I've tested this Samsung, I don't use it. I never use IP rating, but I have it on my text box. And, you know, most batteries are good enough these days. Cameras are definitely good enough for me. I just think that, you know, there are some things that you say, well, this is just a review kind of exercise more than anything.
Unfortunately, your revised TED's tick boxes, which all that weighting and stripped down to just those things that you actually use. Unfortunately, the scores for all of the phones you own or have tried, they all come out pretty much level, certainly far more level than when you included the full list of features in your previous tick boxes. Yeah. So it doesn't actually help you choose a phone.
No, except that the Sirocco gets every box ticked.
All right, okay.
But yeah, I totally get the point. And that's where Samsung wins, because all of those Samsung devices, all of the missing boxes that I've taken away, Samsung ticks every one of them.
Yeah, yeah.
And you just can't take it away from Samsung. They do it right, don't they?
Yeah, absolutely. Let us move on swiftly. Now, PSC Photos, we have a photo of the month winner.
Yes, we do. And it's Ian Bundy with the photo that we featured in show 512, actually, which is camouflage, the picture of the dog on the sand, which he took with an iPhone XS Max. And we said all the wonderful things that we've had to say about it on the previous show. So, Steve Heinrich, what do you think of that?
Yeah, I thought it was a nice photo, too. Just overall, very positive and happy photo to look at. Plus, composed well color-wise and composition-wise as far as the symmetry of everything. So it's just, I kind of want to reach down and give that dog a little pat on the head. So.
And really sharp as well, which I'm not sure if I mentioned that last time. When you drill down to look at the hairs, it's really ever so sharp. I don't know if that's a feature of iPhone 10 particularly, is it, Steve?
It's a very good camera with very fast focusing. And when you've got pets involved, as I was trying to take photographs of chickens earlier today and failing miserably with a Pixel. But the faster the focus is and the faster the chipset, the more chances are that it'll adjust focus to a moving pet. So, yeah, iPhone XS Max, very good.
It's a wonderful photo. Thank you ever so much to everyone for voting on the poll this month. We'll be back with another one. We wanted to make a special mention for the very popular and voted for runner-up by Babel Mohanty with the family fan shot, which he took with the Moto X4. There you go, Steve, an X4 again, which we spoke about that on the phone on the show before, and it's a really super portrait. And I just wanted to give mention to that before we finished. Also, I just wanted to mention that we're starting a theme of the month from this weekend. So we're going to be throwing out a theme of the month. People have said that they would like to do that to add focus and a bit of purpose to what they're taking photographs of, just channeling a few people where they want to go. We'll publish a theme of the month, and people can use the idea or not. It doesn't stop anyone posting photographs of anything else. It doesn't mean that we're going to only accept photographs from that theme for picture of the month. Nothing like that. It has no impact at all on anyone else. It's just that some people wanted to have something to have a bit of fun with. So watch PSC Photos group on MeWe for that theme, and follow it if you like.
As long as there's not a bees or wasps or insects theme, because we've had enough of those. Thank you very much.
Yes.
I know, it's just an interesting challenge for a phone camera to focus that close on a very detailed and usually quite fast moving subject. So you know, shooting bees, I do it myself and I love doing it, and it's great seeing getting a good result, but I think we have had enough of the bees now. Yeah, let's have some interesting left field themes, please. That would be great.
We'll make sure that we get that organized.
Steve, you obviously the G6 has got a pretty good camera. The X4 is not a bad camera either. How important is a camera for you in a smartphone?
It's not the top of the list for me, but I think my favorite setup, and part of why I have the G6 and the X4, is my favorite setup is kind of a normal camera and a wide angle lens. So yeah. When Ted was actually talking about the S10e, that's one of the things, the setup on the back of that one as well. So it's, yeah, like I said, it just has to be good enough. It has to get the job done. As long as it's not too overexposed, usually I'm pretty happy with the cameras, but definitely a wide angle lens on the back is almost a necessity, I guess, for me, just because it adds so much, adds so much interest and content to a shot. So.
And talking of Samsungs, I mean, we Ted and I go wax lyrical about always-on displays and glorious AMOLEDs. And you've, as you say, you've been LCD for the last few years. But you must have been playing with, for example, Samsungs and even OnePlus phones and even the modern iPhones now with AMOLED screens. You must have been trying those in shops. And are you genuinely not sort of wowed and tempted, thinking, well, I really must switch to AMOLED at some point? Or are you genuinely happy with... with LCD, with a longer lifespan, and no chance of burn-in, but with displays that don't quite pop as much?
Yeah, the display just has to be sharp enough for me. I'm not too concerned about poppy colors or anything like that. Just LCD, like you said, the lifespan and the burn-in issue. I think I talked a little bit about this in the past on my podcast, but I've kind of loosened my view on OLED screens, and if it's definitely not something I'm gonna, it's not a deal breaker if it has an OLED screen, because they are very nice and they've gotten a lot better over the years. And yeah, but LCD has served me well, and I'm, you know, it's that's also one of those, it's kind of the default thing for me right now. So
yeah, and the LCD screens, the very best ones, have got much better over the years. I remember back, was it called TFT screens? I think that there was the acronym at the time, sort of 8 or 9 years ago. And TFT LCD screens were appalling outdoors in sunlight, but you can take your LG G6 out in the sun and it's pretty darn usable, which you wouldn't think of weedy little backlight at one edge of the screen competing with the sun, but it actually does pretty well, I think.
Yeah, it's actually, I've had no issues outdoors using it. The only thing with LCDs that I've noticed, obviously, is the little bit of screen bleed at the edges. Usually on the lower quality ones, you get a lot of it. Yeah, but I actually have the G7 in hand briefly, and I noticed that it had quite a bit of screen bleed on the bottom edge. And just that's the least attractive thing, I think, about LCDs to me.
Yeah. For more on all of this, plug, go and see the Pixel Swim podcast. Well, don't go and see it. Go and listen to it, because it's audio. But yeah, highly recommended. And that's out most weeks, but not this week. Anyway, we'll put a link in the show notes. Ted, what's in the MeWe PSC Classifieds group this week?
Not much in the way of phones, I'm afraid, but I've got a couple of things. An iPhone XS Max SIM-free, space grey, 64 gigabytes, excellent condition. Cases, box, original accessories, £695. There's an iPhone SE, 32 gigabyte in silver, SIM-free, decent condition, original box, £90. And there's a OnePlus 5, which I think we featured before, but it's been reduced in price to £150. So this is the 128 gigabyte, 8 gigabyte RAM version, midnight black, great condition, always been in the case. And that's, yeah, as I say, reduced to £150. It's a bit thin on the ground this week, but it does kind of go in waves. This week there seems to be an awful lot of other stuff in there, non-phone. But if you want to look at all of that stuff, then do get stuck in. Please, when you're using the classifiers group, be polite to each other, kind and nice to other members. You know, if people abuse the group or get into difficulties, we will boot them out eventually. So just be nice, be friendly, be kind.
And there's this week's moral and top life advice from Ted. Very good. Heartily recommended and seconded. Thank you very much for coming on, Steve. I shall miss listening to your own podcast, but I'll look forward to that for next week, I guess.
Yeah, absolutely. Thanks for having me on, and Godspeed.
Very good. Ted, any last words?
Usual from me, PodHub UK is where you'll find links to all the other interesting audio podcasts that we're involved in, including Pixel Swim, incidentally, as we also feature those of our friends and stuff that's going on around us. Be back next week.
Including the 361 podcast, which has been missing in action now for, I think, about a year. Come back, Ben, Ewan, Rafe, where are you? Yeah, yeah. Hasn't been a tech box for a while either, I wonder.
There's one out today.
Ah,
just this very day.
That's my nighttime listening sorted then. Well done, guys, well done. Anyway, a cheery goodbye from my two co-hosts.
Goodbye.
Show notes at stevelitchfield.com, and you can keep all of this on the air, tinyurl.com/PSPromo, and win stuff as well. This has been the Phone Show Chat.